Amen. Well, I suspect that none of us, me included, naturally like being weak. For our limitations and frailties to be seen, for us to appear needy and having to ask for help. It seems to go against the grain. We so often want to be strong and independent and resourceful and resilient, able to achieve anything in our own strength, believing the world's message that you can do and be anything you want just by willpower, effort and innate ability. The Apostle Paul, though, following in the footsteps of his Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ, he's beginning to see life through a different lens. In the passage that was read earlier, 2 Corinthians and chapter 12, Paul in verse 9 talks of a hard and humbling lesson that he was learning. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, he says. Ending verse 10 by saying, for when I am weak, then am I strong. And this is the Bible and God turning on its head the way that we naturally as fallen people are and think. No doubt this perhaps makes us uncomfortable and unsettled. But that's part of the point, as God aims to turn us inside out and actually back round the right and proper way. For God would have us know and even boast in our weakness so that we can know and glory in God's grace. And so that basically is going to be my title and aim for this sermon, for us to leave this place just a little bit more boasting in our weakness and glorying in God's grace. And those two thoughts will also be my main 2 points and the way I'd like us to consider this subject. Firstly, thinking about boasting in our weakness. And then secondly, glorying in God's grace. And the two are very much interlinked. So then firstly, boasting in our weakness. As you can see immediately as you start the chapter in the first verse, this chapter and the one before, Paul has been speaking a lot about boasting. You see, there were people, leaders, who had come to prominence in the Corinthian church who were boasting in their speaking abilities and their great intelligence and natural charisma and big personalities. To many, they seemed ideal leaders, strong and confident and powerful. And compared to these people, the Apostle Paul seemed weak. He didn't appear to have the social status and wealth of these people, choosing, he says in the previous chapter, to work as a lowly tent maker, to self-fund himself rather than charge huge speaking fees as these leaders were beginning to do. And he didn't, as he explains, seem to live the charmed, carefree life these other leaders seemed to live. Instead, Paul faced one trouble and hardship after another. And when it came to public speaking, Paul really was unimpressive and didn't have the slick, smooth words and tongue that these other leaders did. And as such, even though Paul, under God, had started the church in Corinth, many were now turning against him and sadly against the gospel message, the true message that he preached. And instead these people were following these other leaders who tragically were corrupting and misrepresenting the gospel. And so Paul, as we see, has been speaking of all the things, all the credentials he actually could boast in if he so chose. After all, before he became a Christian, Paul had been one of the best educated, most highly promising Jewish rabbis of his generation. A devout and distinguished Pharisee who intellectually and in terms of Bible knowledge could go toe-to-toe with anyone. And at the start of this chapter, he speaks of a special experience, a unique religious experience that he had, something he wasn't even sure what it was, perhaps a vision or an actual out-of-body experience where he'd been transported into the heavens and he'd seen and heard things so glorious that no human could or should speak of them. And these kinds of revelations and visions would have been just the sort of thing these other leaders would have boasted of. The greater their experiences, the more capital and kudos they thought that gave them. But God and Paul have a completely different perspective. They know there is a temptation to boast in our abilities and our accomplishments, but instead, they're wanting us to boast in our weakness, in our nothingness, in our lack and our limitations. Indeed, so sure is God that this counterintuitive way of viewing it and doing things is right and best and necessary that Paul says it in verse 7, "So to keep me from becoming conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelation, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from becoming conceited." Now, we're not told what this thorn in the flesh was. It might have been a physical affliction like poor eyesight or a speech impediment, or it might have been intensified opposition and persecution. Perhaps some specific person making it their life's mission to pursue Paul and bring him down. But whatever it was, it brought much pain and shame, weakening and limiting Paul in what he was able to do. And Paul, as any of us would, and as clearly it's legitimate to do, pleads and prays to God that this thorn in the flesh would be taken away. He says, "Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me." But rather than doing that, God allows this painful, humbling weakness to remain with Paul, promising instead, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness." And we'll think more about that in a moment. But it totally turns our world inside out and back round the right way to think that weakness is a good and right condition for us to be in and to boast about. Now, having said that, Paul pleading and praying three times for this thorn in the flesh to be taken away, and indeed him describing it as a messenger of Satan to harass me, shows that weakness and pain and hardship and difficulties are not things that in and of themselves are good. It is what God works in them and through them that is good and to be boasted about. Satan, sometimes in a direct way, sometimes in an indirect way, is the one who is behind all that is bad and painful and wrong in this world. But God is greater than Satan, and he's able to turn what Satan intends for evil and harm into something that brings us good and blessing, even though it can still hurt and cause us much pain and shame along the way. And God actually, of course, created us weak and finite people, limited and dependent and responsive to Him and His grace. It's us buying in to Satan's lie to think that we can be gods who are independent and infinite, who know and are able to do all things without the need of anyone or anything outside of ourselves that causes the trouble. As I say, only God is like that. We're creatures. We're lowly and dependent. We're needing and being required to be responsive to God and His grace. While, of course, at the same time, having been made as the most honoured of God's creatures, given many extraordinary gifts and abilities, and that calling to be God's royal children who relate to Him and reflect Him and represent Him as our Creator and God in this world, as His children who are dependent on Him for everything and who want to bring Him the glory and the praise. And it is the human race falling into sin and believing Satan's lies that has brought shame and pain into us being weak and limited. There are now truly horrible hardships and difficulties that we experience, and we can know huge frustrations and disappointments at not being able to do all that we would want, or perhaps even all that we were once able to do. But now, perhaps through advancing age or some illness or accident, we're no longer capable of. But clearly Paul is of the view that even though now our weaknesses and limitations do cause much pain and shame and frustration and difficulties and can even be seen as a messenger of Satan to harass us, they are something that we boast in. Because being weak, being lowly, being needy, having to ask for help is the place and proper posture of heart in which God works to show the sufficiency of His grace and the glory of Him being God and us, His creatures. As I was preparing this sermon, I was also doing some decorating at my mum's house. And it was decided that some wallpaper needed to be put up. Now, any decorating or DIY is well outside of my comfort zone. And for me, wallpapering was just a no-no. And so my very kind wife, Dorcas, came up with a solution, whereby together we do all the painting and prepping, but she arranged for a kind female friend to come round and help her do the wallpapering. And I was very comfortable with this arrangement. I thought it would be a lovely time of fellowship for Dorcas to work alongside this other lady, and I'd be off in my study doing some sermon prep. Now, when this lady came round, her husband unexpectedly and very kindly came with her to help out as well. And suddenly, I wasn't nearly so comfortable with this arrangement, because I was feeling a sense of inadequacy as I thought about and compared myself to this competent husband who was giving up his time to do the decorating that I'm feeling that I should be able to do, but can't. And so, as it is with shame, I hid myself away in my office, feeling very self-conscious and stupid, I barely said hello to our friends, and I didn't join them for a cup of tea before they started work. I just pretended that I was busy. And of course, the irony was that I was hiding in my office preparing this sermon, just having come up with the title, Boasting in Weakness, Glorying in Grace. And so I realized immediately that I had a good illustration of how alien that is to us, to boast in our weakness as a doorway for the sufficiency of God's grace to be shown and seen. And I was really convicted. I had ignored and I'd shown a lack of love to our friends who had come to do us such a kind favour. And I don't know whether they felt the awkwardness and frostiness that I felt when I said my brief hello and just disappeared. But they deserved the opposite. My thanks and appreciation and support. And so I had to stop my sermon prep and pray, both for forgiveness and also for the grace to truly be able to boast in my weakness. Now, I didn't do much, but I was helped by God's grace to leave my office and offer to make everyone a cup of tea and have a quick chat and show some much overdue appreciation for the excellent work and kindness that had been shown. I still actually felt very awkward and insecure, very, very weak. But my feeble efforts at loving my friends and honouring God by seeking to live out of weakness as a way for his grace to shine through, I think was appreciated by my friends and certainly by my wife as I talked through this slice of life with her later that day. And I wonder whether, like me, you have a way to go in being able to boast in weakness. Whether whatever it is that shows you as weak and needy and a dependent creature requiring and being responsive to God and his grace is doing what it should and stopping you from becoming conceited and all arrogant and self-reliant and boasting in your achievements and abilities and humbling you to truly see your need of God and of his grace, and bringing you to the point where you can even do what is so unnatural and boast in weakness as this opportunity for the glory of God's all-sufficient grace to shine through and be seen. We're meant to be living, knowing and acknowledging our weaknesses and our limitations, as well as our failings and our flaws, so that whenever we identify that we are in need of whatever kind, we are turning to God. And we, again, are doing what we just naturally find so hard to do, and are asking for help, asking for grace, for God's mercies, for his undeserved favour to be shown to us and seen in us. And this does bring us just to focus as we close on this all-important idea of glorying in God's grace. God's grace is wonderfully sufficient. It is everything that we need. Now, of course, we have to be careful again not to misunderstand this, because often we assume that what is needed, what would be good, what would be God showing grace and being kind to us, is for him to take away our problem, so that we no longer would be suffering and weak. And as we've seen, it's quite legitimate to ask God to do that, as Paul does here three times, as he prays about his thorn in the flesh, because weakness and neediness in and of itself is not necessarily good. The pain, the shame that we experience isn't good. But this scenario, it is showing us that God's all-sufficient grace is very much in operation when God chooses not to change our circumstances, not to take away the problems and hardships that we're facing. But when we're left perhaps permanently weaker than we were, severely limited in what we can do, perhaps even completely dependent on others, as is the case sometimes with those advancing in age or born with a disability or who have a debilitating illness or accident. God's grace is very much sufficient for all such people and actually also for all of us in whatever weakness, whatever limitations we have, as well as whatever flaws and failings we have. In many ways, God's grace is shorthand for us having Christ himself, for Christ coming close, for him sustaining and strengthening us through his word and by his spirit, so that God's ability, his power to keep us and even grow and change us is clearly seen against this backdrop of all our weakness. In the slice of my life that I shared, God's grace didn't suddenly, miraculously make me a competent decorator, nor actually did it even take away my sense of inadequacy and awkwardness. But Christ did meet me in the middle of my weakness, through his words, by his spirit. And that encounter changed me. It grew me. He caused me to repent of what was a poor response to being weak, that lack of love to my friends and appreciation for their kindness. And God's grace, Christ being present with me, gave me that power, that conviction, that compulsion to do what I naturally would never have done, and to leave my office and to go and make everyone a cup of tea and to engage with them in friendly chat and appreciation for their kindness. All the while I still felt awkward and insecure and I was weak. Now that may not seem particularly spectacular, but Christ meeting with me in that moment, his grace proving sufficient for that particular weakness, is a stunning and significant thing. Because although it is only a small thing, left to myself, I would not and probably could not have done that. But by God's grace, he was changing me. He was enabling me to bear that fruit of love and care for my friends. And so often, it isn't in the spectacular things. It's in the everyday moments when our weaknesses and our frailties are exposed that small but significant steps forward and changes occur. And we come to an end of ourselves. We encounter Christ and his all-sufficient grace as he comes near to us through his word and by his spirit. And we're grown, we're changed within. Our relationship with the Lord deepens. Our character is shaped to be a little more reflective of Christ. And the gifts that God does give us, even in our weakness, are grown as we learn to love better, or hope more, or abound in faith and good works despite our weakness. And in that, God is glorified. The wonder of his grace is seen. The power of Christ does rest upon us in our weakness, so that it is on display for all who have the eyes to see. How we handle weakness, our responsiveness to God and his all-sufficient grace, our awareness of him, is a wonderful thing. Our natural response to weakness is to hide it, is to cover it up, to struggle on and try to look strong, to seldom, if ever, ask for help, and to make some pretty poor choices and responses in the middle of our weakness and neediness, like me hiding in my office and ignoring my friends. Wonder whether you will do what is counterintuitive and actually in itself only possible by God's grace, and boast a little more in your weakness, seeing it as an opportunity for God's grace to be shown and shine. I wonder what your particular weaknesses and limitations are, what you struggle with, and what perhaps you experience pain and shame over. Perhaps like me, it's that fear of failure, that being shown up as incompetent, as stupid compared to others. Perhaps you find talking in a social situation hard. Or perhaps in the workplace, you're not great at multitasking, or perhaps at delegating work. Perhaps you're physically fragile and frail, or emotionally spent, or spiritually dry and listless. Perhaps you lack relational wisdom and are always putting your foot in it, or are insensitive and don't read people and their emotions. As humans, there are so many different weaknesses, things that we struggle and flounder and get stuck in. Oftentimes they're not moral failings, although sometimes often they are, or they lead to us going morally awry in a way that we respond and seek to cope with our weakness in poor choices. But whether it's us just being weak and finite, or it is part of our flaws and failings, whenever we are in need, whatever that need is, God's grace is sufficient. Continually, we have to be aware, we have to be responsive to God and his grace. In other words, continually, we need to be asking for help, turning to him, and asking for that grace, first and foremost, that we need from God, but asking also for help and grace from others. Hiding our weaknesses, trying to be strong and just carry on in our own strength and limited resources may possibly, in the short term, make you look impressive in the sight of others. Probably more typically, it makes us struggle and flounder and fail. But when we begin to see weakness through the Bible's lens, we'll be led to boast in our weakness, so that we are turning to God, asking for help, wanting that grace to be shown to us and seen in us. A grace that never leaves us as we are, but is continually changing and growing us from the inside out. So let's together leave this place just a little bit more, boasting in our weaknesses and glorying in God's grace.